today is to continue a little bit what we were talking about yesterday, but also a few other topics which all share a common element, and hopefully we'll be able to see how a couple of different points come together to have a common theme that will help us understand a little bit some of the structure here. So yesterday we were asking the question about Dinei Mamonos B'Shlosha. Now, why should that be the case? That if it's essentially a halakhic question, if I want to know, am I obligated to pay you money? Are you obligated to pay me money? Or anything like that. So why should that be different than any other shaila in halakha? So we know that when it comes to general issues in halakha, with kashrus or with shabbos or with anything else, so we can go to one rav and ask our question. We discussed a little bit yesterday also about how binding that is, that the Torah tells us in Parsha Shoftim, Lo Sasser, that we should not deviate from that which the halachic authority tells us. So does that extend to a modern-day posek? Maybe yes, maybe no. We saw the Sefer Achinuch has language like that, where he seems to extend Lo Sasser not just to the Beis Din HaGadol, but also to any Chacham in that generation. So whether that makes it a binding answer, or whether it's more of a question of just general intellectual honesty, that when you come to ask a question, it's because you feel that's where you're going to get the real answer, and therefore you are committing yourself to that. However we look at it, that's worthy of considering in itself, but the point is, normally you have a halachic question, you go to one posek, you get your answer, and you're probably required to follow up with that approach. So why should it be, if it's a monetary issue, all of a sudden we're seeing Dinei Mamonos B'Shlosha? So we had a few suggestions yesterday. There were those who noted that maybe because you're dealing with another party, that maybe you have to have more Rabbanim represented in order to get the other party on board. Maybe also because there are now two sides to the story, so we need to have at least the theoretical possibility of having advocates for either side of the story, like we find in the structure of a Zeborer Beis Din, when each party selects one Dayan, and then together a third Dayan is selected. So maybe that's basically the template for an interpersonal dispute, and maybe that's the idea. We mentioned the Meshech Chacham in his commentary to Parashas Yisro, who invokes that to explain why normally we need three, and why Moshe Rabbeinu could do it by himself. And we mentioned there also that he had another explanation, that it's about invoking the Shechinah, that the Gemara tells us, perhaps both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, that when you have three involved in Din, that brings about the Shechinah. We noted that it could be even less than that brings about the Shechinah, but maybe that's part of it. And that there the Meshech Chachma says that Moshe by himself was able to channel the Shechinah, so he doesn't need three Dayanim. That's essentially, I think, what we were up to. So what else could we suggest? What other significance could there be to three for Dinei Mamonos as opposed to one for a psak? Any other suggestions? What else could we possibly go to explain this?
I don't know if we mentioned this, but yesterday we said something, we need power to be able to get out of chazaka. It's already in one person's
right. Possession. That was another point they mentioned yesterday, which I didn't just review, right? That there is maybe a greater chumra to Dinei Mamonos in some ways. It's not so obvious that it's more chumra, but maybe there are ways in which Dinei Mamonos are more chumra because of the chazaka, because of some societal factors that were mentioned, the fact that Dinei Mamonos normally does require two eidim, while Issa Hetter only requires one eid. Maybe there is a higher threshold. Maybe we do have somewhat of a more complicated process here, that we really do need a broader panel in order to get an answer. So there are a few other suggestions, and some of it has to do with formality. For example, we know that there are certain functions that take place in Beis Din that have significance to them. So let's say, for example, if I am Modeh, if I make a claim and I admit to something against my own self-interest, right, so that has a certain significance to it. Or if I make a claim against somebody else in my own self-interest, it also has a certain significance to it. When Adim come and testify, it has a certain significance to it. So maybe in order for these acts to have the formality, to have the significance that they are granted in halacha, maybe they need to take place in front of the Beis Din. And these are not necessarily elements in a Sevahetra Shaiva. When I want to know whether my pot is milchik or treif, then that's just about the facts of the situation. But when you're dealing with a dispute between two people, so then what is considered to be a claim, what is considered to be an admission, what's considered to be testimony that you can't reverse, all of these things now take on greater formality. So maybe you need a Beis Din in order to make that real. And that without a Beis Din, these steps won't necessarily have such a thing. It's another possibility, some suggest. Shmuley?
Why would that be different than from stock?
From stock?
From stock.
Oh, from stock. Because when it comes to psak, you don't have these different elements coming up. It's basically, I just want to know, am I allowed to do this on Shabbos? Am I allowed to cook fleshiks in this pot? So my question doesn't take on any inherent significance. It could be that the answer takes on halachic significance, but nothing before that takes on, the way I ask the question doesn't become particularly relevant. There's no other side who's going to make a claim that's going to have to be a part of the record now and that can't necessarily be reversed. So those elements you don't necessarily have within a shaila. Now your question though is important. You also are suggesting that maybe the answer itself should be viewed as more formal. That when you get a psak from a Beis Din, maybe that's what we should be looking at also, that maybe the psak takes on greater formality and inherent reality as opposed to an answer on a pot. Maybe not. That's an interesting question. The question, and that's something that some of us far and talk about. So, do we assume that a posek in general is just trying to clarify the halacha? Obviously, he brings to it his own perspective, but he's basically trying to tell you what he believes to be the truth. While in the case of Beis Din, so maybe it's a little bit more than that. That maybe yes, they're coming from the same process, but maybe what they do as a Beis Din creates the halachic truth. And that's something some of the later Svarim talk about, that maybe by dint of being a Beis Din, what they say now takes on a certain inherent objective existence, while the rabbi's answer about your pot being fleshed, that doesn't necessarily have the same kind of inherent reality to it, just you have an obligation to take it seriously. Shalom, sorry. Okay, so that could be. Now, that could lead to another factor. This is something which many suggest, you find in many Sfarim, the other possibility, that maybe it has to do with something we discussed a lot last semester, for those who were this last semester. Maybe this has to do with kafia. Right? Maybe this has to do with the ability to compel a certain response. That when you're dealing with two parties who come to adjudicate a case in front of you. So part of the process here is your belief and your hope that whatever resolution is obtained will be put to practice. If somebody comes and asks you if his pot is kosher, it's okay, so then it's up to him then to follow through and to do what he needs to do or to follow the halacha as indicated. But if you're dealing with two people opposed to each other, so you can't just say, all right, so Reuben and Shimon come in front of me for a decision. I say, I think Reuben owes money to Shimon, and then Reuben's going to say, well, I no longer think you're my posek and walk off. That's not really going to be an effective system. And we have to have some type of formality to it, where not only is the answer going to be administered, but there's also going to be some kind of backup to it. So if the assumption is that there's a need for enforcement, there's a need for kfiya, maybe kfiya itself requires a panel. Maybe kfiya requires a Beis Din. Now, you may recall, those of you who were here last semester, sorry for the discrimination, but I will explain the context, that the last semester we talked a little bit about the concept of kfiya. Spent a lot of time talking about it in the context of Gittin, which is one of the major sources here as well. But the Gemara, separately from that, in Masechet Ketubos, talks about a concept of kfiyah by mitzvos in general. That maybe there's a role to enforce the performance of mitzvos. And you may recall that there was machlokas, the Ptzos and the Sifus and others, about whether or not a bezdin is required for that. Or it could be that if we're going to try to exert any influence in a compulsory way, so the Ptzos thought that you need a bezdin in order to do that, and the Sifus and a few others disagreed. So if you need a bezdin for kfiyah, so that could also explain how that comes in here. That maybe Stamashai, okay, you don't want to listen to me, it's your aver. But you have two people with a monetary issue. If we're not going to be able to enforce it, then we don't have a system. And that's a key function of what Shoftim and Shotrim are about, right? That's what we've been seeing, that we want to have a court system so that people don't kill each other or rob each other blind. So it's pretty worthless if we don't have some type of enforcement. So if it's true we need a bezdin for enforcement, so then okay, maybe that's the idea. You need lamas b'shlosha in order to allow that enforcement. So I'll take more of this question in a second, but it also should take it to the other step. Even if you agree with the ktsos, let's say, that you need a bezdin for kfiya, so then you can understand how the bezdin fits in here. But you could also say that even if you agree with the Nesivos, that you don't normally need a bezdin for kfiya. So one might say, listen, that's when you're doing, you're dealing with something objective. If somebody is objectively doing an aveira, unquestionably, or is neglecting the mitzvah, which is without dispute, so then there's a role for kfiya even without a bezdin. But when you're dealing with these monetary questions, where there's two sides to the story, and everything has to be clarified. So then you could even argue that even if you could have kfiyah elsewhere without a bezdin, maybe for these monetary issues you're going to need a bezdin all the more so. And maybe that's the thrust of Din Mamonos B'Shlosha. That was your point? Okay. So whatever answer you like here, or any other answer that you like, what emerges is that we have a couple of different components to a bezdin, to any bezdin. Right? Maybe all of the bate din that we're talking about in our Mishnah, perhaps, that there are certain formal roles that actually require the structure and the system that's being described in our Gemara. And sometimes there's more of a practical function. So let's say if we have a dispute between people and money. So that could have two different elements to it. Right? We have essentially a halachic shiloh that needs an answer. And maybe on that level it's like any other halachic shiloh. And we just have to figure out the practicalities of how that answer is going to be conveyed. And maybe there's also a more formal role to bezdin, which may require other details. So maybe when we look at this question of Dine Mamonos, for example, it highlights the fact that we have different components. We have the formal aspects of Bezdin, and we have the halachic guidance that we need from Bezdin, and maybe theoretically you could have one without the other. So this is relevant now if we can go back to the point that we mentioned on the first day, that we have a mitzvah of Shoftim b'Shotrim, and that mitzvah seems to be shared by Jews and by Bnei Noach. And we talked a little bit about a possible debate between the Rambam and the Ramban as to what the main focus is. That the Rambam understood that it's there in order to make sure everyone's behaving properly. And the Ramban understood mostly that it's there for dispute resolution. Now, there are some interesting differences as far as how the mitzvah is practiced. And we see that in Eretz Yisrael, so there was a more intense requirement for court systems, that we have to have not only courts in every region, in every plof, but also in every city. While in Chutz La'aretz, it wasn't as extensive. In Chutz La'aretz, only in every region. We see also that when it comes to Bnei Noach, there also, what does the Gemara seem to say? it also only has to be, or the Rambam should say, it also only has to be in every region. So is this just a quantitative distinction? What's the difference between, thank you, what's the difference between saying it has to be in every city or just in every region? And you may recall also the Ramban in that commentary to Shofin. Ramban says that this whole mitzvah only really applied also to Chutz La'aretz and in Eretz Yisrael when we had Dayanim Smuchim, when we had ordained Dayanim. We'll talk more about that in a second. And nowadays, that we don't have ordained Dayanim, so the whole mitzvah doesn't apply even in Chutz La'aretz. So what's going on with all these distinctions? How are we deciding how many batei din there have to be, when it applies, where it applies? So it seems that we have different components here as well. Just like the question of Dinei Mamonos B'Shlosha, where we have a need just to clarify the halacha and a more formal role. So it could be you find that dual track in this issue also. That the mitzvah of Shofin B'Shoshim that applied when there were ordained Dayanim, and we'll have to spend more time talking about smicha, it's going to come up a bunch of times, and on one level we're not talking about the smicha that's given in this yeshiva, but on the other hand, on some level we are. We are talking about a tradition of smicha which is based on this on some level, and that's also going to be a theme. But we know that smicha has to come straight from Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, so God declared Moshe Rabbeinu the first of Mishmach, and Moshe gave Smicha to Yahushua, and we need to have a straight line in order to carry out certain functions of Dayanus. So that has broken off. We no longer have a continued chain. So what we call Smicha today is something different, something we'll come back to later to discuss what it is. So in the absence of Smuchim, so, says the Ramban, so we no longer have this mitzvah, even in Eretz Yisrael or in Chutz La'aretz. So, it seems that there's really two tracks. That the mitzvah to appoint Dayanim Smuchim, so perhaps that's the mitzvah of really having a perfect society, of really making sure that everyone is behaving properly, making sure that all the values are transmitted on a conceptual level, the mitzvah that is specifically about Eretz Yisrael, really, that is all an extension of the Dayanim Smuchim. But there's another function, there's a more practically oriented function. And that we still need today, even if we don't have the Dayanim Smuchim. We're still going to have monetary disputes, we're still going to have people who steal from each other, we're going to have people who cause problems for other people. So how are we going to have a functioning society if we don't have the Dayanim Smuchim? It's interesting, if you look in the Sefer Avi Ezri, the Avi Ezri was written by Rav Shach, the Shiv Panovich. So Rav Shach writes that to compare the mitzvah of Din by B'nai Noah and Din by Jews, so he understands that really Dayanim has an appointed role that only exists by Jews. The mitzvah of Din for B'nai Noach is not really to appoint Dayan. It's really that you should have an ordered society. It's that people who transgress the other six mitzvahs should be punished, should be disciplined, and they should have a society where people are not going to eat each other alive. Now, practically speaking, it's going to be much more efficient if you set up a court system in order to handle this. So you need a court system, but that's only because of the realities of keeping an ordered society. So there isn't really a mitzvah, so to speak, of minui shofti, he understands, in the B'nai Noach din world. There's a mitzvah of keeping an ordered society, and that's where it's more practical to have judges doing it. Rav Shach and Avi Ezra. So he understands that's also, even by Jews, that's the story in Chutz La'aretz also. That there, even though we don't have the smuchim operating like you did once upon a time in Eretz Yisrael, right, even at the time when there were smuchim, so they would only functioning, only receiving smucha in Eretz Yisrael, and travel back and forth was not an easy thing like it is today. So you don't have smuchim outside of Eretz Yisrael. So even in that time, so the courts that are in Chutz La'aretz are really coming from a different perspective. They're coming from the perspective of, okay, so we don't have smuchim, but we need to protect people from being robbed, we need to protect people from being exploited, so everybody is obligated to do that, to have a society where such things are happening, and it's more efficient to do it through courts, so you have courts that are created, but they didn't, that are created as a practical matter. So basically he says that B'nai Noach courts, and even Jewish courts in Chutz La'aretz, are fundamentally different from a Beis Din of Smuchim in Eretz Yisrael. That in Chutz La'aretz, or the non-Jewish world, so there it's really just about practically keeping society in order, and because the courts are a more efficient way to do it, that's what ends up being the direction. So, for example, the question of why it should be in every city or every region. So in Eretz Yisrael, where we want to create this perfect society, this perfect holy society, and there's a specific mitzvah to appoint courts, so that mitzvah goes on every city. In Chutz La'aretz, it's really more about whatever we need in order to functionally keep things going. So to have regional courts, that's enough, usually, in order to provide that structure. So that's where we come to these distinctions of just how many courts there have to be. Okay, so far so good? So again, we see this difference that we have on the one hand a formal court system that's able to carry out certain functions that may not otherwise be possible. And then we have the needs of a society that has to be able to function, has to be able to make decisions in a monetary realm, and that has a whole different practical component to it. So basically, you find the same duality in talking about Dini Mamonos B'Shlosha. You find the same duality in the context of the Mitzvah of Din, B'nai Noach, Chutz La'aretz, how many courts do you have? All of it is reflecting the same questions that sometimes we're looking to do all of the functions of an ordained court, and sometimes we're trying to just make sure that society functions. Okay, everyone following so far? So this now takes us to another concept, which isn't so explicit on our daf, but it does come up in the Rishonim and it comes up elsewhere, and that is the idea of Shlichus Ayin. So just to explain what that means, if you come across that term. So essentially, to be a Beis Din, again, you have to be Sabach. But nowadays, we don't have Smuchim. So what do our Bate Din do? Right, our Bate Din don't do certain things. They don't give Malkus, for example. Right? They don't function as Beis Din does in the fullest sense of the word. So what is it that they do and what is it they don't do? So essentially what emerges, we put a couple of Gemaras together, is that the Bate Din that we have in America today, to the extent that we have, are there to give us the basic needs, the basic fundamentals of a functioning economic environment. So, for example, in our Gemara, even without having the word Shlichusayhu, you do have the statement of Reb Chanina on the bottom of Beis and the Beis, that normally you would need to have mumchen in order to deal with issues of loans. Right? But then going at the top of Gimel and Aleph, I say Reb Chanina's line that bottom of Beis and the Beis, the top of Gimel and Aleph, the Reb Chanina, Dvar Torah, Echad Dini Mamonos, Echad Dini Nefashos, Pedrisha Vachakir. That normally, as far as Torah law is concerned, whether we're dealing with monetary law or we're dealing with capital crime, you need a full process, which means you need to have real thorough investigation of the Eidim, as the Gemara talks about later, what that means. Shenamar Mishpat Efer Yelochem, that both of them seem to have the same system, Mamonos and Nefashos. Umatam Amru Dine Mamonos Lobayina Jerusha Mechakira. So what reason is it that we have this more lax standard when it comes to Dine Mamonos? Kedei Shalom Tinodeles Bifnei Lobin. Because we don't want to close the doors in front of people who lend money. What does that mean? This is actually, in terms of synergy, so I mentioned that before Rosh Hashanah, probably this Sunday, I want to discuss a little bit of Prusbul. So Prusbul, just we want to talk about because it's a end of the year topic that comes up only once every 7 years, so we have to take the opportunity to talk about it. But it happens to, in many different ways, synergize right into our Sanhedrin Sugya. So this is also a point of overlap, that we're motivated by Kedei Shalom Tinodeles Bifnei Lobin. What does that phrase mean? It means that we need people to lend money. The mitzvah in the Torah, Parshas Mishpatim, that one of the greatest chasadim you can do is to lend money to people in need. And we want to make that possible. We don't want to discourage people from lending money. So we're afraid, on the one hand, that people won't lend money if their debts are going to be completely canceled in Shemitah year. So that's where Prusbul comes in. Again, we'll talk about that in more detail. And what our Gemara is talking about here is who's going to lend money if we know that Daniel's going to lend me money, and then when it comes time to collect, I'm going to say, never happened, never was. And he's going to say, okay, I'll take you to court. And I'll say, well, good luck. You're going to have to need both an airplane and a time machine to get me back to Bezdin of Smuchin in order to get back your loan. So that's what you're going to have to do. So Daniel's going to say, why did I get involved in the first place? Right? Or at least next time he's going to know that he's not going to lend me money because it's not very practical for him to get it back. So that'll be the end of the loans. So we don't want that. We want to give a certain amount of space to people who lend money so that they shouldn't be discouraged from doing so. So we have to give them a better out. We have to give them an easier way to be able to collect. Now we'll see, we'll discuss more. This we'll probably get to more on Monday. But this is subtly different from gzelos and chavalos, which is a distinction we'll get into more then, that when it comes to somebody being robbed, so we need a society to have protection for that also. Right, we can't allow people to get robbed without any kind of recourse. But it's a little bit different in degree. That we're confident that if somebody is robbed, if there's a way for them to deal with it, then they'll make the effort to deal with it. But when it comes to loans, the threshold's a little bit lower. Because if there's a way for them to deal with getting their loan back, but it's too inconvenient, they'll say, forget it, who needs this? I won't own the money in the first place. That logic doesn't apply to somebody being robbed because nobody's choosing to get robbed. So there is more that we need to provide justice for people after they've been robbed. So we're confident that people will pursue what they need to do in order to press charges. We don't have to worry that they'll say, it's not worth the hassle, I'll just make sure not to get robbed in the first place. It doesn't make sense. But when it comes to lending money, they could just avoid the whole situation by saying, I won't earn money in the first place, so we have to be even nicer to them. So we have a greater need to make it possible for there to be a Bezdin system. So our Gemara, that sentence that we just read, that's a little bit of a hint to this attitude that we're going to have a reduced threshold so that people can get their loans back. So now, what does that mean to you? How do you understand that? So, do I need a Bezdin for, do I need a Bezdin of Smuchin for loans, or do I not need a Bezdin of Smuchin for loans? What does that mean? The Gemara says, really, you need Jerusha v'Chakira, but, you know, we're worried about the implications of that, so we'll allow less. So how does that work? So the Torah law doesn't apply anymore? What control do we have to make that work? And, well, how are we able to adjust that standard? So it could be Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. Right? We'll find that coming up. Right? It could be that because Bezdin has some type of authority to control monetary property, that maybe they're imposing that on the system, and that's why we can be a little more flexible. Do you see any other possibilities? Surely?
It's possible that they're already saying you only need one.
Sorry?
It's possible that they're already saying you only need one.
one.
Oh, it is possible, right? I mean, in other words, it could be, although we have to figure out how that works with this line here, but it could be that maybe it's from the other direction. In Minha Torah, you could have done it without this, and normally we insist on more for other considerations, but those considerations are not absolutely required in Minha Torah, and we could waive them if it's going to mean that people otherwise won't lend any money. So that already gives you two different directions to come from. Right, we'll have to figure out the details. But just to clarify, so basically what Arya was saying is that maybe in HaTorah you really don't have an avenue here. But the rabbis came and created an avenue, which they could do because of Hefker as they have. While Shmuley is coming from the opposite direction, which could also be true. That maybe, really, Min HaTorah, this would work by itself. But normally, we insist on more. But we can do without that in a situation of great need. And people who won't lend money, that's a situation of great need, so we do with less. Okay, so that's something we have to figure out. Jacob?
You said that the margin is almost,
mm-hmm.
whether a bond had the ability to uproot the matter with the rose, you know,
yes.
they are actually changed voters.
So possibly, that might be a little bit similar to Hefker, Bez, and Hefker, that maybe it's about Chazal imposing a very strong level of authority to move around things in order to make this happen. So, as we mentioned, there is the phrase Shich Usayu, which doesn't appear over here, but appears in many other places and in the Rishonim. And there, the Gemara has an idea. If you put a couple of Gemaras together, so on the one hand, the Gemara mentions it in the context of Git. Gemara in Gittin and Daf Peches says that really you need smuchim in order to compel a get. And we spent a long time last year talking about circumstances where it is possible for Bezdin to compel someone to give a get. And there the Gemara says that we really shouldn't be able to do it nowadays because you need to have smuchim, you need to have really ordained judges in order to do that. So in that context, the Gemara has this phrase, Anan shlichusayhu dekamoi, because, you know, we are acting through a method called shlichusayhu, which I'm purposely stalling on translating, because we'll see the translation is a little bit complicated. So we find it in that context, and we find it also in general in the context of batei din, that yes, normally you need three smuchim for a monetary bezdin, and our batei din today, the bezdin of America, the various batei din in Brooklyn, Machon Lahara, whatever bezin you're going to go to in Lakewood, wherever it is, so you don't have smuchim, so what are they doing? So they are functioning based on shlichusayim. So the Gemara tells us, again putting some Gemaras together, that there basically have to be two rules in order, two factors in order for a contemporary bezin to function. That the situation has to be shchiach, has to be something common, and what exactly counts as common and doesn't count as common, that's a complicated discussion. But it has to be something which is enough of a societal problem, and therefore we made this institution. So something that could happen relatively often. And it has to be a davrish of a momon as opposed to a knas. What does that mean? That there is a halachic distinction between mammon and knas. They both involve paying money, but there's a difference between the two. That mammon normally refers to money that is owed based on logical reasons. So if I stole money from you, then I owe you the money that I stole. If I borrowed money from you and I refuse to pay it back, so I have a genuine monetary debt. If I damaged your property and therefore caused you a loss of however many dollars, all of these are cases of mammon. That's actual money that I owe you. A knas is a penalty which goes above and beyond the actual monetary loss. So, for example, kafel. If somebody steals something and he's caught with stolen property, so the Torah says he's got to pay kefil, he's got to pay twice as much. So the first principle he's paying, that's mammon, he has to give back what he took. But to pay a second time, that's a penalty, that's a knas. Or, for example, those who learned the ksubas at all last year, so we know that by onus and mafata, the Torah talks about a knas. So knasos, in general, are bate din don't do. That shlichus ayu is there for mamon, and is there only for what's in the category of shliya. With those two conditions in place, our contemporary bate din function, and that's basically the rule. Now, when we talk about knas, just so you should know, as a matter of practicality, so there is a capital kuf and a lowercase kuf. That theoretically, there are bate din, especially the really established bate din in history, that do issue penalties, do take punitive action. We call that a lowercase kuf. If they decide that there should be a certain penalty that society needs in order to make sure it's not going to descend into anarchy. So even our contemporary bate din sometimes do impose penalties. When we say they can't do a knas, we mean the specific knasos that are dealt with in the Torah, that the Torah spells out for those situations, that you really need a bez din of smuchim to enforce and to bring about. And there is a tradition from some of the svarim that nowadays, let's say, for example, if somebody is going around raping people or seducing young women, so if the Beis Din wants to impose a knas that they hope will discourage this, so it should be a knas that's different from the numbers that the Torah talks about, so it shouldn't look like that they're actually doing the knas in the function of Beis Din smoking. So that's basically what our contemporary Bate Din do. And this is associated with this issue of Shlichus Ayin. So the question is, what does that word mean? I've been delaying translating it. So, what does Shlichus Ayin mean? And by the way, there are a lot of sources that reflect on this. I didn't put them on the list yet because the list was already too long, but I'll be happy to give you places to look, which talk about this a little bit more. But what do you think Shlichus Ayin means? What do you think the word means? Are you?
We are messengers.
So literally translated, that's what it sounds like it means, right? That's certainly, that's, you know, kind of like the tempting distraction answer, because it may not actually be accurate, but that's what it sounds like. It sounds like that you need to be a dayan somach in order to do certain things, and even though people who are carrying out these things may not have that status, but they are appointed messengers of the original dayan. I mean, the language of Gemara really does sound like that. Problem is, it has all kinds of technical problems. As we alluded to before, you could have shlichus ayin in different senses of the word. You could have a functioning Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim, and you have courts outside of Israel which are not needed. And you could say, alright, maybe they're the emissaries, they're the shluchim of the Beis Din Yerushalayim. So maybe in that sense of the word, shluchim in the technical sense fits a little bit better. But nowadays it's very hard, because nowadays there's no shluchim anywhere in the world. So to say that our Bate Din in Brooklyn or in Lakewood are functioning as emissaries of the Beis Din Yerushalayim, where there's no living Beis Din, doesn't really work as far as standard shluchus is concerned. So it's possible that it means something else, and we'll have to come back in a second to what else it could mean. But the words literally translated certainly sounds like it means that we are their emissaries. So there is a major machlokas, and you can see that this is going to affect what we said before in terms of Aryeh and Shmuley commenting on how we allow for a lower standard by Malmanos. So is Shlichus Ayin a din min haTorah, or is it a din midrabbanan? So the Nesivos, in the very beginning of Choshen Mishpat, the Nesivos in Siman Aleph, takes the position that Shlichus Ayin is a din min haTorah. The problem is, a lot of the Rishonim already seem to disagree. Among them, for example, the Rashbah, in his commentary to Yevamos and Daf Mem Vav. So the Rashbah is pretty clear that Shlichus Ayin is a din midrabbanan. Because he says, how does Shlichus work? Let's say, for example, we know that we already mentioned you have Shlichus Ayin by get. Right? That we're allowed to force a get by the method of Shlichus Ayin. So says the Rashba, that works because we have an idea that the Gemara says in the beginning of Exodus that called Makadish Adaita the Rabbanim is Makadish. That when somebody gets married, he does so with the agreement of Chazal, and therefore Chazal also had the ability to be Mafkiya Kiddush, to undo Kiddush. So in other words, because there is kind of a path for Chazal to undo that, that's why you can use it for Yit. And you can use it then for monetary purposes also, like I already said before, because of Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. But you can't explain that that's how we accept Yit, that's how we accept Gerishin rather. And we have people converting nowadays. So people convert in front of a Bezdin. So how does that work? So some say that's also Shichusayim. We have a tradition, Gemara tells us, that it has to always be possible to accept conversions. L'doro Seichem, it has to always be possible that you can accept conversions. So therefore, even though in order to convert you need to bring a korban, but since nowadays it's not possible to bring a korban, so that shows you the korban is not ma'akev. It's possible to convert and become Jewish without a korban, even though l'chachilu, that's what you need. And ultimately, when it's a Beis HaMikdash, again, you're going to have to make up the karbanos. But until then, you're Jewish. So, what about the Beis Din? So, we need a Beis Din. So you could say, okay, well, we don't have smuchim nowadays, but shlichusayu. So says the Rashba, no, shlichusayu is only working on love and the karbanos. So you could tell me that that works for other things, hefker, bezdin, hefker, and the like. But how's it going to work for geirus? You're going to tell me that they're only Jews on a level midrabanan? So if somebody marries a geir, so the marriage is only affected on a level midrabanan, it's not going to make any sense. So we have to assume that geirus is functioning fully on a level in our Torah. And therefore, maybe that works because we don't really need smuchim for a bezdin for geir. So essentially, the Rashba has this position that shlichusayu is only effective on a level midrabanan, or is only reflecting a concept midrabanan. So that's how many of the Rishonim assume. Now, if you say that shlichusayu is shlichus, then the idea seems to be that there's something we need smuchim for, and people who are not smuchim can act on behalf of the smuchim through the shlichus. That basically the smicha is a positive element which can be conveyed through shlichus. But, as we mentioned before, it's very likely that shlichusayu is not really about shlichus. And many achronim explained, or Soloveitchik understood along these lines, and many others understood also, that shlichusayu, what it really means, is that the Torah tells us, Eila mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem, these are the mishpatim that must be placed before them, and you saw that, I think the first day of Mar Makomos, that the Gemara says, lifneihem, lo lifnei hejotos, it has to be only in front of ordained dayanim. So that means that it's wrong for any non-samuch to take on the role of a samuch. That's, you want to call it disrespectful, you want to call it something else, but that's essentially what this din of the Torah is telling us. That when you have smuchim, so the smuchim have to do these jobs, and for anyone else to do that, that's wrong. But if not possible for the smuchim to take care of these situations, so they're mochel on their kavod, and that's essentially what shlichusayu means, that they have given rishus, they have allowed other non-smuchim to function in their role. And to what degree do they allow that? Apparently they allowed it in these cases. They allowed it for something that is a common problem, and we have to make sure there's a way to deal with it. Or for situations that are, and together with that, situations that are basic monetary needs, because because if no one's going to take care of that, people will just be robbing each other blind. So that's how many understand that that's what's happening. That because these dayanim are, the dayanim smuchim are allowing it, so that's what shlichu sahu means, and that's what takes away the problem of a non-samach to do this. And that could be effective even nowadays when there are no smuchim, all the more so. So essentially you don't really have an isser of lo lefnei hajotos in those cases where it's necessary. The Divrayatziv is the Klausenberger Rebbe, and his Shuvas and Hosha Mishpat, the famous page that's in the above. The Divrayatziv suggests that it's more than that. So since the Bakei Din, the Sanhedrin, have granted this authority to the later Bakei Din who are not Salma, who are going to be carrying out these tasks, so essentially the whole prohibition of Lo Sasser that we discussed yesterday, that tells us at least that the Beis Din HaGadol has a binding authority. And according to Sefer Achinuch, probably more than that, but at least the Beis Din HaGadol has this binding authority. Since the Beis Din HaGadol has now ceded that authority to all of the later Batei Din, in the Chutz La'aretz and in Eretz Yisrael, so then that also becomes a part of Lo Sasser, and one is obligated to listen to that psak because of Lo Sasser. Okay, everyone follow that? Any questions about any of that? So let's try to review what we said and try to put it all together. That basically what we ended up discussing today is the duality that we find within Din. That on the one hand we have certain formal roles that we need, Beis Din or a Sanhedrin, depending on what we're talking about, to carry out. And we have a certain formal mitzvah of Shoftim v'Shotrim that requires smuchim and the like. But even in the absence of that, we have practicalities that we need to be able to adjudicate monetary issues so that we can have a functioning society, and we have to always have a system for that and for other related concerns. So we saw how that played out in a couple of different scenarios. We saw that in the question of why we need to leave for a Beis Din. We saw that really to get up sock, you could just go to one posek. But there might be other reasons why you have a formal structure of three for a Beis Din. And we talked about whether that's because you have two sides, whether it's because of Shlina, whether it's because you need to have theoretically advocates on both sides, whether it's because of creating a status of Beis Din so that you could have formality, or whether it's because of Kfiya. We talked a little bit about the whole Mahlokes, whether you need Beis Din for Kfiya or not, and even if you don't, maybe, especially in this interpersonal context, maybe you need it anyway. And then we talked again about the Mahlokes, the Rambam and the Ramban, by Mitzvos Din, by Noah, and the Ramban and Chumash, that the courts in Chutz La'aretz were only a mitzvah when they were a smuchim. And nowadays we only deal with it through shlichu sahu. And Rav Shach's point to the Avi Ezri that only in Eretz Yisrael do you have a mitzvah of appointing judges per se. And for Bnei Noach and Chutz La'aretz, it's not a mitzvah of judges, it's a mitzvah of ordering society. And practically speaking, that's done most efficiently through judges, but there's no specific mitzvah of that, and that explains a couple things, including why they don't have to be as densely put as they do when the mitzvah is fully operational. And then we talked also about shlichu sahu, and that also reflects this issue, that there are certain things that really only a Beis Din Samach could do, but we can't have society that doesn't have any avenues of relief for people who are going to be victimized monetarily, or just have disputes monetarily. So we saw, for example, our Gemara, which says that the lower standard for loans, for monetary issues of loans, that people shouldn't be discouraged from lending money. And we see from other Gemaras and from Rishonim here that there's this concept of shlichu sahu, which allows Batei Din to function when it's both common and money as opposed to knas. And we talked a little bit about whether that's a din d'orais or a din d'rabbanan. And the question of whether it means what it sounds like when it's about shlichus, or is that technically problematic and maybe it means something else, that there is a prohibition in HaTorah for non-mumchim to take up the role of the Mumchim, and they have the ability, the Mumchim, to allow this, and especially in a time where there are no Mumchim, so then that also takes away this problem, and that's how our contemporary Batei Din are able to function in a practical sense. Okay, any questions about any of this? I'm going to try it's a little bit complicated, everyone can follow more or less. Okay, I mentioned a few people before, I mentioned also yesterday, that there's a lot of interesting topics that come up in the time, of course, of this discussion, and that a lot of major themes that have been touched upon. There were a few questions this morning about capital punishment and about the basic standards for din, as far as they know, if they're concerned in terms of practicalities. We made a lot of references yesterday to various issues of rabbinic authority, which could be followed up on in much more detail. So I'm increasingly thinking that probably that'll be a Sunday track after Yantif, until Yantif, we need to talk about the Yom Tov on Sundays. But after Yantif, so maybe the Sundays after that, we'll give some time to talk about these broader issues that come out of the signals that we're seeing, such as the death penalty, general issues of war and terrorism, and issues of rabbinic authority, all of that are touched upon in our Gemara. We'll take the time to show that in more detail on Sunday's end. Okay, I wish everyone a wonderful day. Should be only good things, and I will.